Accession number 10494, Reel 2.
Mrs. Penge, Reel 2.
Yes, yes, England was criticised, and later on, of course, particularly Churchill. France having a border with us occasionally too, but I don't remember details about it. I can only speak personally that I was certainly not influenced by anything in any anti-English or anti-French feelings at all. What we were much more bombarded with was propaganda about the Jews, which was pretty obvious because there was a very pernicious publication by the Nazi Party called Der Stürmer, which was hung out on sort of boards behind glass regularly so that people could look at it. I mean, nobody bought the rag, I think, but it was publicly advertised, and I had strict instructions from home not to look at it, but we did, of course, and that was the most horrible propaganda against the Jews and nuns and monks, that I do remember, about their practices and so on. But that was, that's what I say. So France, England, America were not so openly criticized and attacked as these members of our society.
Can you remember why the Jews were supposed to be such a threat to Germany, according to the regime?
Yes, they were supposed to be bankers who bled us dry, and they were in high offices where they had influence, and particularly tried to ruin the country economically and financially. And, of course, then it was mentioned they had contacts with America and other countries, and so were capable of ruining Germany from the economic point of view.
Was it easy to believe the propaganda, or was it laughable?
It was really quite laughable, because it was so absolutely exaggerated that one could hardly believe it. I mean, most of us knew Jews, so we knew, at least that the people we knew didn't behave like that. What happened behind the scenes, one could say, maybe it's true that something happens in the banking world. How do we know? Anyway, there were different races which had unpleasant characteristics, apparently. And so we were a pure Aryan race, so we were really not allowed to mix with them, even look at them or talk to them, certainly not marry them.
Which particular Jews did you know in your area?
Well, we knew a few. We had neighbors. Actually, we had a neighbor who was a banker. Then we knew a few. My father had friends that were solicitors. But apart from the banker who lived next door, I think the other Jews had all converted to Christianity and had fought in the First World War. And I know about one solicitor who lost a leg in the war. He was raided one day by Nazis coming into his house to see if he had any propaganda material or what. I don't know what they were looking for. And he said, "Look at my leg. I lost that for Germany in the last war." And I must say, they did leave him then. Eventually, he emigrated to Brazil with his family before it became really bad. And the pediatrician we had when we were children was Jewish too. We had quite a few Jewish children in school as well. And we certainly were not in any way influenced. We played with them. We were friendly with them. The Jewish banker we eventually heard, obviously his bank was taken away from him. He moved into a small flat. He lived in a very palatial house. And then we heard that this was after 38 that he committed suicide because he had been asked to take a transport of Jews to the East. As I say, our doctor and the other people emigrated in time.
Did you stay in Düsseldorf? Were you always living there?
No, we as my father's business went bankrupt and he had to find a job as an employee somewhere, he found eventually a job in steelworks, which were actually called the Hermann Göring Steelworks, near Brunswick in the Salzgitter area, where steelworks and coke works, and he got a job there as the he had to look after the timber supply of the works. So we had to move in November 38 to this small town called Wolfenbüttel, which is about 10 kilometers from the much larger town of Brunswick. And there we stayed, well, my family, part of my family, my sister is still there.
Did you find this was a much different area to Düsseldorf from the political point of view?
Yes, in Wolfenbüttel I got the impression that there were quite a few Nazis and the Nazi movement really quite strong. Whilst originally when Brunswick had been known as a communist town before Hitler came to power, and apparently Hitler once a very poor reception there. That was before he came to power. But being a small town, one probably realized more the influence of groups like Hitler, like the Nazi party. The Hitler Youth was fairly strong there and very active. And the house in which we eventually lived was a house with three floors, and three families lived in it. The owner of the house was a high official of the Nazi party who lived on the ground floor. We lived on the first floor. I'm just saying that because it's quite interesting what happened. My father used to listen to the English station, English radio station transmissions, which was strictly prohibited. Anybody caught doing that could have gone into a concentration camp. So he more or less crawled into the radio to listen to the transmissions. And we thought nobody ever knew about that. Of course, we children knew that we had not to talk about it. After the war, the Nazi family down below told us that they had known it all the time. My father still went pale when he heard that. But the only thing is that one can say that even these people had some decent feeling. One word from them and he would have been in a concentration camp. How they knew about it, I don't know. They must have just once come and he hadn't switched it off in time.
Why was it so important to your father to take that risk of listening to British radio?
Well, because he realized that we didn't hear the truth of what was happening in the world, and in particular during the war. He hoped to hear what really was happening to us and what was going on in the front line. And he had a great admiration for England, having once been here before the war, before the First World War, in fairly different circumstances, and he was really quite an Anglophile.
To what extent did the regime impinge on your freedom, or to what extent were restrictions placed on you?
Well, the restrictions, for one thing, that we couldn't travel so freely into foreign countries if we had wanted to. It was a bit difficult. Other restrictions, as a child or young person at that time, I didn't feel restricted in any way. The restriction was more on adults in what they were actually saying. And what we were doing, we had to eat a stew once a month. That was necessary so that the money that was saved on a more elaborate Sunday meal was collected for the purposes officially to help old and poor people. It was actually called the winter help. Of course, the money went towards other subjects like armament, presumably, because Goering used to say that cannons instead of butter. So most of people probably full well knew what was happening to the money to be saved by eating a stew on a Sunday. And they actually came and collected the money on that day, presumably to be able to smell if somebody roasted a piece of pork instead of having the stew, which was really quite funny. It was so blatantly obvious why they did it. And one was sort of pushed to buy certain things. Practically every month something was sold in the streets and collected again for this winter. And you just had to buy it and put it on your lapel to show that you had supported it. What other restrictions? Well, as I say, as a child, I didn't notice it so much.
What about books in your parents' personal library? Were they obliged to get rid of or hide any of them?
Should have removed a few, I realized. I think they put them behind the other books, but Thomas Mann and so on. But we always had them in the house. And I don't think my parents were really particularly particular about that. They weren't very worried about that.
What about the standard of living under Hitler? Were there aspects of the regime which were positive, which garnered support for the regime? Did standard of living go up, for example?
I imagine so, that people who had been unemployed had jobs. I should think the standard of living obviously improved for them, but as I say, in our family, sort of middle class family, we didn't notice it, any difference. No improvement particularly, because that wasn't necessary. But I'm quite sure that many people who had been out of work really were quite pleased with what was happening to them. They got a job again. But otherwise, no. I mean, of course, I must say that too. My father got a job at these big works, these steel works, which were obviously erected because they needed steel for the armament industry. So indirectly, he got a job too through the regime. But, yes.
Did your father's attitude towards Hitler change after Hitler came to power, do you think? And as the regime went on, did your father become more anti, or did he feel that Hitler wasn't so bad after all?
No, I think he became more anti. Oh yes, he sat more at home. And he once told us he, like many German men in those days, they met for a game of cards in a hotel regularly. And he met there with being a small town, it was sort of quite parochial, with a bank manager and various sort of leading people in the town once a week. And he came home once, he said, one of them had said, well, if you talk in that way, we can't sit with you at this table any longer. He had made some anti-Hitler remark, which he thought he could do with these people. And so he was more careful in future. It was a terrible dilemma, of course. He would have liked to say more, but not everybody is a hero. And one has a family to look after. It is quite difficult. I know he did something for a Jewish friend, but I never quite... That obviously didn't talk much about it, but she came one day and she stayed various days with us, and she went back again and she left certain things with us. But we weren't told, obviously for safety reasons, that we didn't talk about it.
Were you aware at any stage, either before the war or afterwards, of any organized opposition to the regime in the form of leaflets being circulated or anything of that kind?
Not, certainly not involvement. We heard vaguely something about in Munich, students and brother and sister had organized something, one heard something. But nothing else at all. Nor did we know that well-known painter in our small town hid a Jewish woman for the whole of the war. We only heard that after the war.
You mentioned the fact that your father could have gone to concentration camp if he had been caught listening to the BBC, but what did you, in the years 1933 to 45, know personally about concentration camps? Did you know of their existence?
Yes, we did. That we knew there were camps where people like Jews, Jehovah's Witnesses and communists were sent. Yes, we did. But I don't think many people knew about exactly what was happening there. No, I don't think they did, because we, in our area, well, of course, Belsen wasn't all the fine, the Lüneburger Heide anyway, we're fine if we didn't know much about that. Apparently there was some sort of a camp near the works where my father worked, because he mentioned he saw once a sort of group of people dragging along. And that was all he ever said. Oh yes, we knew there were concentration camps. I don't think one can deny that.
Did you know of anybody who was taken away to a camp?
Well, we can only guess that after the Kristallnacht, we had a Jewish girl in our class. She and her family were never seen after that night. But nobody ever said what happened to them, and we can only assume that they were taken to concentration camp, because they couldn't have got out at that time, couldn't have left Germany, I think. And except for that one banker who was meant to take a transport and who killed himself before. No, I don't know anybody else.
How was Hitler and his fellow leaders of the regime, like Goering, Goebbels and so on, regarded by yourself and the people around about you? Because in Britain, they seem to have been regarded as a laughingstock. How were they regarded by ordinary German people?
Yes, I don't think they were considered a laughingstock. I mean, there were jokes going around about Goering, but they're more friendly jokes. But Hitler, I think he was admired by quite a few people. He did convince people with his rhetoric. And I must say, as a child, I went to see him when he once came to town. I went to see him and waved, yes, and were quite proud to have seen him. Goebbels, I think, for instance, he was another matter. I think he was a laughing matter, and people made unpleasant, not very friendly jokes about him. He was more in the public eye versus as being the minister for propaganda. And his peculiar looks, I suppose, people were rather sort of inclined to make jokes about him. But many people realized not Hitler as a laughingstock. I should think some of them realized that he was a danger. And one had to be very careful, of course, what one said about him, and people kept their opinions to themselves.
What type of jokes were cracked about Goering and Goebbels?
Oh, about Goering, about his love for jewelry and flashy clothes and sort of uniforms that he had designed himself, and of course his enormously fat figure. It was and Goebbels, the sort of jokes, because he has his enormous mouth in every respect, made fun about that. I remember just one joke that he could eat an asparagus the wrong way round, not lengthwise, because of his enormous mouth. That's why he was a minister of a certain area where they grew asparagus. I mean, that was a harmless joke. These were the three people they made jokes about. I think people like Himmler, there were no jokes. I think people were aware of that something was sinister about him.
So, of the leading members of the regime, there was a certain amount of affection for Goering, was there?
Yes, it could be, yes. Like, one tends to find sort of fat people rather amusing. They don't seem to be so dangerous. I mean, he never affected me as a dangerous. I mean, Goebbels I was disliked, and he seemed to the slimy fellow. And Himmler had this look too. But Goering, no, well, he seemed to harm us enough, chap.
Was there any sense of the leaders of the regime being amongst middle-class people like yourself being rather low-class and common?
No. Well, they weren't, I think. They weren't considered. You mean if the leaders came from lower class, apart from Hitler, I don't think one knew anything much about them. I have no idea, really. I know that Goebbels was educated at a Jesuit college and had a doctor degree. I really know nothing about Goering's background. I didn't take much interest in that either, I must say.
On the question of war, at what stage did you personally feel that a war was coming? Was it when you, right at the beginning, when your father predicted it, or much later?
Well, there was a scare once, yes. I remember there was once a scare when we were still in Düsseldorf. I can't remember which political event it was that I got frightened. There was something happened. And I thought, well, that's terrible. What are we going to do? But nothing happened. So one had that feeling since 37, I think. I personally had the feeling, an uncomfortable feeling occasionally, but one didn't think much about it.
So when war was declared, did it take you by surprise or had you expected it?
Not really. I think we had been sort of prepared by talks. I can't remember being terribly shocked when war was actually declared and we heard war had started. I know that my mother cried, but I didn't seem to be taken by surprise completely, but she wasn't very political. But I, at the time, took it as a sort of almost an interesting thing, seeing what's going to happen now. And that, of course, we had been, I mean, Hitler's talking and talking and talking about expansion and making Europe great and improving Europe with our Aryan race might have had some influence on us young people. I should think it had. That we had a feeling something great was going to happen.
When war started in September 1939, were people gloomy about it or excited or what?
Well, around me, I felt a sort of more gloom, I think, than excitement in my immediate surroundings. It sort of seemed a sort of quiet, calm atmosphere at that moment.
As far as your personal life was concerned, how did you begin to feel the effects of there being a war on?
Well, rationing, of course, but that was the first effect, which wasn't terribly strict at that time. And again, I got the wrong, probably, I can't really compare myself with the rest of Germany because we lived in a town where we had ample fruit, vegetable, and this sort of thing. And we didn't, in the first few years of the war, suffer very much from food restrictions, even though we were rationed. We got a lot of things outside rationing, which weren't actually rationed, like vegetables and so on. We didn't find that so terrible in the first years of the war. And afterwards, a bit later, in the 40s, of course, it bit even in country areas like ours. But we were never hungry. Never, no. And the only thing, of course, restrict us, we had to, even though Wolfenbüttel was never bombarded, we had alarms and had to go into the cellar at night just for safety reasons, just in case something happened. And because we had
flak
cannons in the area, and the only thing that could happen, that a few splinters broke windows or fell onto a roof. And sometimes during the morning we had to go into the cellar during school time. And that was about the only trouble we experienced in the first few years of the war in that town. Later on, I wasn't there towards the end of the war, so I can't say exactly what happened there. But we were never in any great danger. The only thing I remember, that theater performance was interrupted. We had to run home, and we actually did feel some sort of splinters falling around us and a terrible noise. And that was about the worst we experienced.
As far as standard of living was concerned, were there any particular goods which you personally didn't have access to, which you particularly missed?
Yes, clothing. I think that we noticed most of all. Shoes and materials for dressmaking or ready-made. We got a certain amount of clothing coupons. Once they were used, they were used. Again, we were fortunate because these works where my father was employed had a shop for the employees where one could get something extra sometimes. It was somewhat elitist, apparently, but we managed to get a few things occasionally. Gloves or so, I remember we bought there. Not much, but it was something. But that was, yes, I think that was about the worst, looking back. I mean, it's not terrible, but as a young person, one missed certain items of clothing or liked to renew them. I imagine it was a bit... Well, but looking, having been to Russia, I can see is it a comparison, but similar. It was all cheap stuff, stuff we could get, and not very plentiful.
When did you actually leave school?
In March 43, I took the equivalent to A-levels, called Abitur in Germany. And 3 weeks after that, we all had to join an organization, I can't translate it, it's from Reichs Arbeitsdienst, which was a uniformed organization, and sort of it was a pretext to help farmers who had lost their workers through the army. But it had existed, this organization existed since the 20s, when they first, I think, wanted to occupy